name is Matthew Pfeiffer. Thank you for joining Toxic to Triumph. On this episode, we're going to be talking about narcissistic mothers with B. Jackson, who specializes with narcissistic mothers and narcissistic wounds, narcissistic injuries that happen as a result of having a narcissistic mother. Look forward to having this conversation, and I will talk to you soon. Hello, my name is Matthew Pfeiffer. Thank you for joining Toxic to Triumph. I have on a very special guest today. I have on B. Jackson. She is a life coach who helps specialize people on dealing with a mother wound, people who may be dealing with a narcissistic or a toxic mother. And this is a very hot topic because a lot of people feel differently about talking about narcissistic women in particular, but narcissistic mothers. But when we talk about childhood wounds, it doesn't just come from a father, it can also come from a narcissistic mother as well. And when people come to me about a narcissistic romantic relationship, quite often we always end back up with a childhood wound. And oftentimes it can come from a narcissistic mother. So B, thank you very much for joining us. If you want to take some time out and introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself and how things are going out there in California.
Thank you so much, Matt. I really appreciate the invitation. And you got that perfectly. That's what I do. I call myself the mother wound mentor because there's a lot of hurting people out here. So I am an author. I'm a speaker. I am a coach to women who have difficult or narcissistic relationship with their mothers. And what I do is I help them to reframe their experiences and to write new narratives as wiser women. So the objective is to be wiser women than our mothers were, and to reframe the experiences so that we can move beyond those experiences and to benefit, right? I believe in healing through individuation and sovereignty, because I feel like a lot of us are so attached to our mothers' personalities and their desires, their wants, that it keeps us handicapped in a sense. And in order for us to truly heal, we have to see ourselves as individuals apart from them. And then we have to be self-governing, like feeling like we actually have a right to take full responsibility for our lives and not have to consider her and all of her issues in choosing to advocate for our own health and well-being. So in a nutshell, that's what I do. And it's pretty nice up here in California. The weather's pretty good. And
as they say, it's never raining in Southern California, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It's always a shorts weather.
From my audience's perspective, I can just hear people saying, well, how can you even tell if you have a narcissistic mother? Yeah. Because with mothers, with narcissistic parents in general, you only get one set of parents. You don't have any other experience with anyone else. At least when you're dating a romantic partner, quite often you may have dated other people that you can say, this is different from what I've experienced before, but we literally only have one mother. How can you tell if you've experienced a narcissistic mother growing up, or maybe you currently have a narcissistic mother?
Yeah, you know, I tell people all the time, they say, the characteristics, as you know, for narcissism are pretty much the same across the board. However, there are nuances in how they show up with respect to gender and culture and things like that. And so oftentimes with a mother who is narcissistic, she will become adversarial to her daughters. In some cases, she will become sexual competition for her daughters. She will go out of her way to humiliate her daughters. Things that would normally be private and discussed between a mother and a daughter then become the conversation between family members or friends or whoever will listen for the mother's enjoyment, for the purpose of humiliating her daughter and for keeping her in a space where she is more controllable. A lot of these mothers have absolutely no boundaries with respect to their daughters. Certain conversations that should be just for, like, if you were a child, just between adults or for an adult, she has no problem including you in on those conversations or initiating you in conversations that you're not mature enough yet, or even that's even appropriate for you to even have with your mother. They like to sabotage, right? They like to sabotage their daughters. So, and one of the things that happened to me, for example, is my mother liked to, she liked to put me in a lot of pageants and contests and things like that. But what she would always do just before it was time to take a photo or it was time to do an interview is she would say something upsetting to me, or she, so that, you know, the, so that my mental state was not as sharp as it should have been. Right. Or just before we took pictures, she would say something ugly to me. And so I couldn't smile. And then I would get blamed for the fact that she spent money and now the pictures are not useful. Mm-hmm. Or she might sometimes set you up to date someone or be in relationship with someone that she knows is not good for you, is perhaps you're an adult, that person is an adult, but you're a teen. She has no problem with encouraging you to be with an adult or to be with an abusive person or somebody that she knows is going to create havoc for your life down the road, because she herself, that's what she has going on in her life. So she wants you to emulate that. So there's lots of different ways that this can show up for the daughter of a narc. It's not really cookie cutter. It's just more like things that are unnatural, inappropriate, and you can sense them. Even when you don't have the vocabulary to express it, something inside lets you know that something is not right. Even so much as just even how they say your name. I saw a video once of a kid that said, I think someone had asked the kid, how do you know when someone loves you? And he says, you know they love you by how they say your name.
Yeah.
Well, daughters of narcissist moms, our names are never spoken with kindness and with love. The vibration is always with contempt and disdain.
Right.
And quite honestly, it's one of the reasons why everybody that knows me by B. It's because when I heard my name spoken, it was spoken like it was spoken with nails in it. And so, yeah, so there's lots of telltale signs that our mother is like a narcissist.
The competition thing is huge, even to the point where I've heard of narcissistic mothers flirting with their daughters, husbands, and boyfriends, saying things. You just, like you talked about before, just being completely inappropriate, being completely sexualized towards them, even putting them down and devaluing and body shaming. People who struggle with a narcissistic parent, narcissistic mother, you know, will have a lot of body dysmorphia issues because of narcissistic mothers. So we it can have a major impact. And I've also seen people that will marry or get highly involved in a relationship very young, not realizing that they're doing this subconsciously because they're trying to escape this mother and trying to find, you know, another way out. And they just don't allow for you to grow up whatsoever.
They don't. And they fight you when they see you doing that, right? Mm-hmm. And they punish you for taking any type of adult role,
right?
Up to the point of, you know, starting arguments with you, starting fights with you, or taking things that you say out of context for the purpose of alienating you and then sharing that information with other people in the family, so that they too can then also punish you for stepping out of the place of a child, right? 30, Absolutely. 40, 50 years old, it doesn't matter. She is the adult and you are still the child that is to comply.
Right. And a lot of that leads to triangulation between you and your siblings, you and your cousins, where especially if you're the scapegoated child, the rest of the family will have the permission to treat you like dirt too, right? Yeah. To just, you know, to mistreat you the same way that the narcissistic mother might treat you as well.
Yeah. So interesting that you say that, Matt. I was just talking with my daughter the other day about just different events that went on. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I didn't know that that's what it is, an indication of narcissistic behavior.
Right.
But my son, his cousin invited him to a birthday party or something at the cousin's house. Mm-hmm. And so I took him to the cousin's house. And when I get there, I realize, oh, they're having a family get together. I'm just not invited. And so I go inside to be cordial and say hello to everyone. But when I walk into the room, everyone's head is down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, okay. And an aunt comes out of nowhere and she says, she hugs me and she goes, B, I think something's going on with you. Something's really going on with you. And I'm like, yeah, you guys are what's going on with me, right?
Right.
So everyone has got the message that I am an outsider on the inside. And mm-hmm. it was obvious that everyone had had a conversation, but I had not been a part of it. So these awkward things like that, right? Mm-hmm. Where the family is treating you, how they treat you, which in concert with the mother, mm-hmm. but it's not just because it was a one-time incident. It's because what we don't understand as daughters is that this seeding has been taking place for months or years. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's not hard for them to believe whatever story was told to them so that they can ostracize you and alienate you.
And this is this becomes the form of the devaluation. And when we talk about gaslighting, I mean, so you and I, it sounds like we're on the same boat when it comes to going no contact or low contact with a narcissist. And this is one of the main reasons why I tell people you got to get out, because you don't really truly understand the big picture of the seeds of doubt that they're placing in literally the world around you. Yeah. So you walking into that room, if you don't understand what narcissism is, if you don't understand what you're actually dealing with, you walk into that room, you think that there's something wrong with me. This is the reason why a lot of people have this struggle coming out of narcissistic abuse, not realizing that the narcissist set this up long before you even got to that party, and was going around placing seeds of doubt in people. And then you walk in unaware of what's happening. The abuse with narcissists, in particular with narcissistic mothers, with all narcissists really, it's not just the stuff that you see. A lot of it is the stuff that you don't see that you may not even be aware of until you actually get out and until you start to take ownership of your life, so to speak.
Yeah. You know, what I find, well, looking back, what I have found is that there were so many things, Matt, that I saw and that I experienced that I didn't, you know, obviously I didn't recognize it as being this type of malignancy. Mm-hmm. But now on this side of things, looking back, you know, you can't deny it, right? Mm-hmm. And we talk about just going back to the whole sexual competition thing, there was a time when I was about 18 years old and I had begun dating this guy, invited him to the house, and we were sitting in the living room, and then my mother comes down the stairs, and she has, I don't know if you have heard the term wife beater. Have you heard the term wife beater?
Yeah. Little,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So she has on a wife beater. She has on no bra, and it's completely see-through. And I'm thinking, oh my God, does she not realize, you know, what happened? Maybe she, you know, what was she, maybe she's tired from work. I made up all these excuses in my head about why that would happen. Mm-hmm. And somehow, I don't know who took the picture, but somebody actually took the picture. So there was evidence that that actually happened.
Right.
So when it was brought to her attention, she ripped it up. She got rid of the evidence. Mm-hmm. But looking back in hindsight, I know that that was one of many different, you know, episodes in which there was this weird sexual unwanted thing going on between, you know, my mother and I. And so, yeah, you really don't realize. You really think it's you. You make excuses, and you have to lie to yourself in order to help her to keep the facade going on. Like, you lie to yourself to help her to continually gaslight you about what you just saw or experienced.
Because if you don't, right, there's consequences to be paid. Because what she put you through, and what narcissistic mothers do, they put you into a double bind. Yeah. Guess what? You either put up with the abuse, or if you did speak up that time, it immediately would have flipped to gaslighting. Like, how dare you talk to your mother that way? Yeah. I can't believe that you would ever think that I would want an 18-year-old boy, and all of a sudden, but internally, you know what this is. You know what she's doing because you've experienced it your entire life, you know, and you just know, and just based on even just behavior, like you're not stupid, even though they might try to make you feel like it, or they might try to convince you that you are. For you, when did you start to realize, for a lot of people, that time period is very different of when I start to realize that what I'm going through is not normal behavior from a mother. I think for a lot of people, that's tough to realize, and it's a tough place to come to realizing that my mom isn't just a strict mom like what people say she is, but there's something else going on. What was that like for you to begin with?
Honestly, for me, it was much later than it was for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I deluded myself for decades. But it wasn't until my late 30s that I realized that there was a problem, like that there was a real problem, and it wasn't your typical problem. Mothers and daughters have issues every now and then, you have disagreements, but this was more than that. Right. And that was actually the first time that I had to make the decision to just go no contact with her, because I realized that if I continue this, I'm just going to constantly be on this hamster wheel, which at that particular point, it was quite predictable, right? Just like any other toxic relationship, you know, you have your good times, your love bombing, then you have your discarding, then you have your hoovering. It was just this pattern. And I also knew that she would do sometimes what I call play the trump card, which is to seed discord between my siblings and I. Mm-hmm. And that last time she put the nail in the coffin between mm-hmm. with my siblings. And that's when I went no contact with her. And I also ended up having to go no contact with my siblings as well because of that. Right. And it's like they won't play those cards. They're very careful. Like they're like poker players, yeah. Right? So they play the ones that they can to kind of keep you in line. But when they really want to set a message, they'll play that trump card that really will oust you and make sure that you have no support and you have no connections. Right. And yeah, and that was in my late 30s, beginning of my early 40s that I realized that. And I had to take a stand, and that stand was extreme. Family members did not support it.
Right.
Siblings, even though they knew what was going on, you know, with my mother. They have their own reasons for mm-hmm. wanting to play into that. I don't blame them. I get it. I understand. Everybody's yeah. swimming and fighting for their lives, right?
Right.
And so it just meant that I had to walk it alone. But it was in my late 30s.
Yeah, I always compare this to, I tell people that narcissism, in particular, like if you're dealing with a covert narcissist, but it really is the same process of people who are in a cult society, yeah. cult system. And so when we bring that same mindset and that same mentality to a family, right, when you break away, even though they know that that's the right thing to do, just like someone who is broken away from the cult, the rest of the members are going to ostracize and look at the one that broke free as the problem, not mm-hmm. the person who is creating the problem, even if they know it internally, because what everyone that's a part of that system is trying to do is survive. And when we yes. bring that same process over to a family, anyone's siblings who are going through this, they're choosing that this is the best route for my own survival, even if I do see what is going on. And this whole triangulation thing is real, because the narcissist, all of them, they want to make sure that they keep people on their side, because mm-hmm. there's power in numbers. And if they can keep people manipulated and under that fog, then anyone who breaks away, now you're the threat, not me, right? There's yeah. a problem with you, not me. No one else sees it. No one else, you know, everyone else loves me. It's obviously you. This becomes kind of a part of that gaslighting. Okay. You mentioned we were off the air. We were talking about programming. How does the narcissistic mother program her children into this, into following along with complying with her orders, complying with her bad behavior, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, for me personally, when I look back, and we're kids, you just want to please your mother, right?
Right.
Every kid wants to please their mother. They want that love. They want that validation. And I think that it's just, they play on our natural inclination to desire that and to want that. They already have plans for us based on what they've observed. Like right. we were talking before we started this this meeting about how, you know, we run from ourselves. We run from mm-hmm. our gifts and our talents as a result of that. But our parents, our mother in particular, has already observed those things.
Right.
She knows it. And so she takes extreme measures to make sure that you don't rise up, but your natural inclination, at least it was for me, was to still try to get that approval and to still keep working for it. And right. you get it intermittently. It's never going to be anything that's consistent. It's going to be just enough to keep you trying for the next time.
Right.
My little brother, who's now deceased, he once saw me trying so hard. We had just moved into this house, and I was wanting to please my mother, and my mother was a clean freak, has always been a clean freak. And so I'm down there scrubbing the floor. I'm like Sealy from The Color Purple, you know, I could use a mop, but no, I've got a brush, right? Yeah. And so my brother comes in, and he didn't have to say much. He just put his hand on top of my hand, and he said, "B, stop it."
Mm-hmm.
And there was just silence between us
mm-hmm.
because he knew and I knew what I was trying to do, right? And the silence between us that you're never going to, just stop it, just stop it. But they know. And so they will keep us on that wheel with the intermittent validation or the intermittent, you know, something special that you get to do with her, and then it's pulled back. It's almost like your program's similar to like Pavlov's dogs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It is.
And so it keeps you on that wheel when you don't know what it is. And the desire between mother and child is so strong. Mm-hmm. And they know that. It's almost like I told one of my mentees before, it's kind of like, I don't know if you remember that movie with Michael Clark Duncan, and I think it was called The Green Mile.
Oh, I remember
and,
that well.
Yeah, he's laying there with the two little girls. He has one in his arms and one in the other. And he says, he killed them. He killed them with their love. He killed them with their love. He killed them with their love for each other. Mm-hmm. And our mothers play these mental games, these psychological games with us for their own benefit by using our love against us.
Yep.
Right. And our desire for validation and our desire to be close and our desire to know them better and to come in closer. And
and the desire for acceptance, their acceptance, and the desire for their approval, and desire for them to say things like "I'm proud of you," desire for them to validate us, right? There, because that's what parents and that's what adults are supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be raising a child. We're not there. Children are not there to satisfy their parents, right? Where our parents, the big people are supposed to take care of the little people, as Heather Thompson always says, right?
Yes.
That, you know, and, you know, but when you're growing up in a narcissistic home, quite often you're made to feel the opposite, that I'm here to serve and please this narcissistic person. And you don't know any, better. You don't have any other experiences to be able to justify or to do any different.
You really don't. And I found, and most of us find, that no matter how good you do that job, whatever the job is, it's never going to be enough, right? You get an A, but you could have gotten an A+, right? I've written several books and graduated from a hell of a lot of things and still heard my mother say, oh, my kids will never be doctors.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always that the goal is constantly being moved, right? Until you just decide to take yourself off of it and set your own goal.
And when you were breaking away, because you mentioned that you're no contact, we know how it impacted you with the family and what their response was. What was that response like with society, whether you talked to them about it, or was there a pressure from society, just knowing how society thinks of mothers? How did that impact your decision, if at all?
It actually didn't impact my decision. And I think the reason why, Matt, is like, I guess you become so used to rejection, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I am well-versed in the art of accepting rejection, that I knew it was coming. And so it didn't faze me by that point. You almost become numb to it, right? It's this interesting dynamic, because you come numb to it, but yet you still want acceptance and you want approval, but you actually truly don't expect to get it at this point. You expect to be rejected.
Right.
And so I actually, for a long time, I didn't tell people, because it was, you know, it's a stigma and there's this shame attached to it, right? A shame that you don't have a relationship with your mother. You only get one mother. You just need to forgive her. Maybe you guys can work it out. Maybe you can go to all of these different things that I was expecting. And so I just didn't play into it. And so it's not so much, I didn't lie about it. I just didn't acknowledge the fact to anyone that I didn't have a relationship with my mother, rather than subject myself to the ridicule.
Right.
And
So with that said, I mean, we all have a mother wound when we have a narcissistic mother.
Yeah.
How does one heal from that mother wound, that you call it? How do we begin to, once you've identified it, how do you begin to address it?
Yeah, there's lots of different ways, Matt, from my perspective. Lots of different ways. So, for example, when I first initially went into therapy, I thought I was going into therapy for something else.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was highly active in my therapy, I ended up discovering myself that this is actually related to my mother.
Right.
And then I began to study further and I would begin to implement what I studied. And so my suggestion to everyone is that whoever you partner with as a team, because you're going to need a team, this idea of doing it yourself, it's just, you know, it's a fool's errand. You're going to need some support. So either you're getting support with a therapist. If it's appropriate, you can get support from a mentor or coach, but you have to be active in that process because nobody is coming to save you. And it really bothers me. It's like, it's a passion. I speak out vehemently against this idea that therapists, mentors, and coaches, they are saviors. Nobody is coming to save you. You are going to be the hero in your own story. We are sidekicks. We are guides that help you to reach the goal that you have set. And based on what you're telling us, then we present these resources to you. We present this knowledge to you. But at some particular point, I'm going to stand back and watch you walk off into the sunset and plant your flag on a place called victory. But it's going to be because of you. So get on a team, choose your teammates and be empowered to choose them, hire and fire at will. There's no point in wasting time with a therapist or a coach that you know is not able to help you, does not have the background, can't relate, can only just give you book information, but has no real practical things. You know, she can't truly understand. He or she can't understand. So be active in your healing and understand that there's no one modality. That you should be using several things, I feel. And so for me, I use therapy. I use mindfulness. I use journaling. I use what I call biohacking. I don't know if that's the actual term, but basically auto-suggestion for my mind to help to reprogram my mind.
Yeah.
There are many different modalities, but we have to be open to them and we have to feel that we are truly sovereign creatures. Like a lot of times, the reason why therapy doesn't work for people is because they sit back as if the therapist is then now solving their problems and they're not active, right?
Yep, I agree. I tell people all the time that you have to put in work. You can't just, you know, a lot of times people just sit there and they'll, you know, obviously I deal with mostly romantic partners, but I deal with narcissistic parents as well. But people will, when they're ready to start dating again, they'll say things like, well, I've been single for 2 years. I've been single for 3 years. Yeah, but what did you do? You know, did you not put in any work? Because that's just like having, you know, saying that your car broke down. You decided not to put in any work in it. And you decided to start it back up 2 years later. Well, the issues are still there.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe even worse because the car's just been sitting there at this point. Right.
Tires are rotted. Yeah.
Now you have other issues.
Yeah. The same. I tell people that I talk to all the time as well. They say, oh, well, I'm just going to move away from my mother. I said, well, when you move away, there you are.
Right.
Do you not understand that you have been programmed for 20, 30, 40 years? It doesn't just go away just because you move away. It's going to show up in your relationship choices. Right. It's going to show up with the jobs that you choose or don't. It's going to show up with a narcissistic boss, right? It's going to show up by you passing down your fleas to your children when you have them because you don't realize that that's what it is.
Yeah.
Or you think that your behavior is normal and acceptable, and that the problem with people accepting you or wanting to interact with you or build friendships with you is because of them, when actually it's you, right? It's you and your personality issues because our mothers damage our personality. So there's lots of work to be done in personal development and becoming self-aware. Like that's the problem. We have been so far removed from ourselves. We are not self-aware. The foundation of self-love, self-confidence is completely shattered. And we have to do the work, the work to repair it. But it's a commitment. And people think that it's a place that you arrive to. And when I say, no, understand, you're not going to arrive. What you're going to do is you're going to embark upon a journey of self-mastery. Right. So even after you have figured out, like for me, just saying, okay, I'm no contact with my mother. I went through the grief process. I hollered, I screamed, I negotiated. I went through all of the things that we go through as if someone died. But now then I'm still having to deal with all of the issues that resulted from that, including PTSD, right? Which comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, what the hell is this? I'm supposed to be free now, right? But I liken it to like someone who has been in war. And while you're in war, you have to be on. You have to be, you know, looking, making sure that, you know, there's nothing coming from the left, nothing coming from the right. Like, you have to be full on in that experience just to survive. And then once you come out of that, now your brain is like, whew, okay, now we can start dealing with some stuff.
Absolutely.
You know?
B, I appreciate you coming on. I feel like we could talk literally for hours on hours. So I'm definitely going to have you back. But I am interested in hearing your closing thoughts and let everyone know where they can find you. And we'll have to continue this conversation another time.
I agree. It's been a pleasure. You can find me on all social media at Mother Wound Mentor, Facebook, Clubhouse, TikTok, YouTube, all of that good stuff. And I do what I call family check-ins on TikTok on Sundays, where we just check in with the family to see how you're doing, answer any questions, and just be a support. Because one of the things that we need when we are healing from narcissistic abuse is a support community, people that understand and can support us and that we can share and that won't judge us for the feelings and for the choices that we make. So you can find me on TikTok on Sundays for the, I call it Let's Talk About Your Mama, for that. The Let's Talk About Your Mama community check-in.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the audience for listening. B, thank you very much. And
thank you.
We will talk again soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Matt. Keep your head to the sky. Spread your wings wide. Show the world you can fly. Baby, show the world you can fly. Show the world you can fly. Dream big. Keep your head to the sky. Spread your wings wide. Show the world you can fly. Baby, show the world you can fly. Show the world you can fly. Dream big. Now they told me dream big. That's all we take with us. The things we did. Dream big. Yeah. Just dream big. That's what my nana said. Dream big, worry, tell me, dream big. It's all we take with us.